Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of The Cinema Guys. Sit back as we share our love of movies and we discuss anything from our top lists to trailers we've seen. This week we will talk about possibly one of my favorite genres in movies, that's horror movies, and give our thoughts on Blair Witch. To finish it off, we will give everyone a few recommendations to watch something at home. I'm Brad, and here with me are my ever awesome co-hosts, Justin and Michael. How you guys doing?
Doing well. Right.
Ooh, that was good.
You almost had it.
Not my favorite genre of movies, but I know you guys both appreciate the horror films.
I do like the horror movies quite a bit.
Probably what got me into cinema the most.
Interesting.
Probably for someone possibly getting into cinema, it's probably one of the easier genres to do getting into. I mean, you can set it in a farmhouse.
I was like neglectful like... parents, and so I stayed at home with the TV all the time. I was like, well, I guess watch these movies.
Well, it also has a little bit of taboo to it. You know, as you're a young kid and starting to watch these movies, you know, it's a little... Scares you a little bit. It's fun. It's exciting. Get to pull the covers up over your head because you're too scared.
I did not want to do that. I was home alone a lot. I would fall asleep with knives, and my parents would come home and be like, why do you have a knife in your bed with you? I'm like, in case someone tried to, you know, kill me.
Never had to worry about that, but I grew up in suburbia, so, you know, it was all safe.
I think we might have been suburbia. I don't know.
I grew up around a lot of cornfields, so Children of the Corn.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, Children of the Corn. I should change one of my lists right now. I totally forgot about the movie, dude. You just said it.
Malachi.
Oh, did that mound of dirt. The scariest thing in the world.
Let's start off with a little something we call Flick Picks. Flick Picks. We're going to give you a list of either top or, you know, sometimes bottom lists of a genre category we choose. This week, we're going to give you our top horror movies. Since this is Justin's favorite genre, we'll let him kick it off.
All right. And I just changed my list. I bumped a movie and added Children of the Corn. Because this is why I saw that movie again. Any of these I probably saw, except for maybe two of them, I saw at an inappropriately like young age. And I shouldn't have watched these kind of movies, and it scared the crap out of me. Children of the Corn being one of them. I watched it. I spent a lot of time at my grandparents' house in North Carolina, and they live in the midst of cornfields. And I would ride my bike to other people's houses and just cornfields on both sides. And like, I remember the mound of dirt like chasing me, which was the scariest thing. And the redhead dude. The redhead dude and the mound of dirt.
So this was a documentary your grandparents were showing you.
Yes, yes. This is it. This is the children that live in the corn. They're also British. So Children of the Corn, really scary. The Ring. The first time I saw that, it absolutely super scared me. The second time I saw it, I remember thinking, why was I so scared of this movie? It's not even that good. But the first time, it really freaked me out. Third, El Orfanado. Which is also The Orphanage. I loved that movie because the little Spanish kids were super terrifying when they were like, uno, dos, tres.
It had a pretty good creepy atmosphere to it.
The next one, Paranormal Activity, which I think you guys did not like.
Wasn't a fan.
It freaked me out because of how subtle it was. I was like, until the end. The very end is actually the part where I was like, okay, I'm done. I'm not scared anymore, but... I was like, okay, if demons are there, this is the subtlety of how they will be. I don't know if they'll, you know, live in the attic above your head. I don't know about that part, but I liked how just everything was very subtle and slow. And then
demons last, like to shut doors.
Yeah, they do. Shut doors. And like move picture frames.
Yeah, demons are just a bunch of a-holes.
They're more like gremlins, you know, just kind of troublesome.
Not even that. I mean, gremlins are a little bit mean. I mean, they're just like... like an annoying roommate.
Quick side note on gremlins. They're really organized. They like get together for we're going to knock on their door, do Christmas carols for a second, because this will be hilarious.
Oh, yeah. They're constantly organized. It's basically an improv troupe. They're just doing bits all the time.
The demons aren't organized.
And why does
Phoebe Cates continue to serve them in the bar? I don't understand. She's not getting paid. She's not getting tips. And she's so stressed out. And now she's giving them beers. Oh, this is a crazy night. Leave the bar, Phoebe Cates.
I don't think they gave her a choice to leave.
Oh. I guess, maybe. the guy with the gun? That was a great impression, actually. And then last one, Which is fitting for tonight, The Blair Witch. The first time I saw it again, it freaked me out.
The Blair Witch Project?
Sorry, The Blair Witch Project.
We have to distinguish in that.
Yes, I know. Yes. The Blair Witch, Blair Witch Project, and then I never saw that weird second one.
The Book of Shadows.
Oh. You guys, yeah, I didn't ever sound it good.
No, it's not.
It's not really.
It's not hidden film or found film, right?
No, it's a traditional film, but it's really bad.
Okay. Do you see the witch in that one?
I don't remember. I watched it and it was just really bad.
Honestly, the only thing that I remember from that movie is the song by Godhead at the beginning of the movie. That's the only thing I can remember from that movie.
Which sets you up for how great it could be.
Right. So if you're listening and you love horror films, you probably heard my list and was like, really? That's lame. Now you can hear more seasoned veterans in the horror genre.
I don't know about seasoned veterans.
As they go through their list.
I'll let Brad start off.
My list, it's one of those that I came up with one and then it was, oh no, but I like this one, but I like this one, and kind of ever changed. The top one doesn't ever move. My top favorite number one horror movie is John Carpenter's The Thing. It's a movie I can pull out and watch anytime. I love the effects in that movie, you know, for the time period when it came out in 1982, and it's got some great gore in it, and it's got some great tension in it, and just the... And who doesn't love Kurt Russell?
I do love Kurt Russell. I love him.
No, I'm saying everyone loves
him.
Especially Kurt Russell in a John Carpenter
executive
movie.
Executive Decision?
Yeah. Snake Plissken.
How many John Carpenters, apostrophe S, are there? I know there's John Carpenter's Vampires, which I saw.
Are you saying movies that
he's done?
That are called John Carpenter's...
I think just that one.
Well, there's John Carpenter's The Thing... John Carpenter's Vampires.
But is it called John Carpenter's The Thing, or is it just The Thing and everyone's just...
Well, in the title, it does say John... It does come and say John Carpenter's okay. About it.
I didn't like his Vampires.
No. I enjoyed Vampires.
They were the more Nosferatu
His
vampire.
Ghosts of Mars, I wasn't a huge fan
with
of.
With Ice Cube?
Yeah.
That one was really bad. And, like, the ghosts were really, like... I felt like from the movie The Warriors, like, just a gang of, like, surly people,
I mean,
people,
his best movies are The Thing, Escape from New York... And Big Trouble in Little China.
He did Escape from New York. Did he do Escape from L.A.?
And Halloween.
He did. Oh, and Halloween.
Escape
How
from
can
L.A.
I forget Halloween?
Yeah.
Escape from L.A. is basically Escape from New York.
Yeah, he did Escape from L.A.
With a wave, a surfing wave.
Well, and a bunch bigger budget and, not as good. I mean, basically after his late 80s stuff, it started to pretty much go downhill.
I want to do that same movie, except at a big giant wave. I
mean, Prince of Darkness is pretty good.
Assault on Precinct 13 is...
Yeah,
is
that's
a good
earlier.
I saw that.
That's much earlier, yeah. But since you're not a horror fan, if you haven't seen The Thing, we need to watch it sometime.
I wanted to say that I did, but I certainly don't remember it. So.
And next one's on my list, no particular order. The original Night of the Living Dead. It's a movie I watch every year. It's my favorite Romero zombie movie. Like, I love the black and white. I love the simplicity of just in the farmhouse. I mean, he does that a lot, like... Dawn of the Dead's the mall. Day of the Dead's the underground bunker. I know a lot of it's budget constraints, but I do like that simplicity of the tension with the people. And next would probably be The Descent, directed by Neil Marshall. And another one of those kind of a simple movie. Gets a group of girls that are cave diving?
Spelunkers.
And it's very claustrophobic, so if you don't like tight spaces and caves, you're not gonna
Blair Witch movie.
Kind of, yeah.
Spoiler alert.
But that one is very, very, very good.
What is that one called?
The Descent.
Ew, I should watch that.
Yeah. If you watch it, you have to watch it when it's really dark out, turn off all the lights in your house, so it's just pitch black.
But not the Vin Diesel movie.
Ooh, that was a good movie.
It was.
A little jumpy.
It was. We're going top five after that, I'd probably say John Carpenter on the list again. His Halloween is always a classic. Another one of those that I could watch over and over and over again. Other than that, I mean, I have a lot on... I could move the list around, but off the top of my head, another one that more current that I love is The Strangers. Another one of those simple horror movies set in one house, and then three people are trying to break in to get... A couple that are at home, and the whole concept is, why are you doing this? Because you were home. And it just scares the crap out of me.
That's scary. Almost like when a stranger calls back, the dude who paints himself. Do you remember that one?
I don't, actually.
It was like the girls, it's like that line that they stole, that Scream stole, like, because I'm in the house already. Like, it was like a guy kept calling, and she was freaking out, and she's babysitting, and the kids are gone, are missing when she goes up there, and then she's dead, and they don't know why, and eventually you find out that he painted himself to look like the walls.
Oh, it's just that newer remake that came out, what, like in the 90s sometime?
Yeah.
Sounds like an SNL skit.
It's a lot of work to paint yourself to look like a wall.
I mean, if they can do it in the Hunger Games, they can certainly do it.
Oh, PETA.
I would say that's my top five. That's, I mean, good. I could probably keep going on for a while, but...
I'm going to watch The Descent. That sounds scary.
That's good. I like my horror with a little bit of comedy built into it. I don't really get scared at horror movies. Like, when I was younger, it scared me a little bit, but I've watched enough now where... The gore is more fun. It's just like, I love the practical effects, and I love, you know, even the CGI gore that comes out now. It's fun. My favorite horror movies always have a little bit of comedy built in, just because I feel like it has more rewatchability. So I go with I like Dawn of the Dead a little bit better than Night of the Living Dead. It has some.
I mean, his trilogy is great.
It is. All three of them are great, but I prefer the middle, Dawn of the Dead. Bigger budgets. I love the mall setting. I love, you know, just the act structure of how it's set up, where they're escaping, and then they have this, you know, let's clear out the mall, and they have a little bit of downtime, and then you get the biker game headed by Tom Savini come in, and then just the gore is just over the top, and, you know, it's just ridiculous for late 70s.
And so you prefer your zombies a little blue-tinted?
I prefer a blue Hare Krishna zombie walking around.
Yeah.
And then I go with the British classic Shaun of the Dead, which introduced us to the great Edgar Wright, Simon Pegg, Nick Frost. Just, you know, you could tell they're fans of the genre, they're fans of horror movies, and they just brought their, you know, form of comedy into this genre and made what I think is just a perfect film.
Oh, it's fantastic.
And just, oh, it's so funny. And then I go with Sam Raimi's Army of Darkness. I enjoyed it a little bit more than Evil Dead 2. It's a very close with those two movies, but Army of Darkness, I have fond memories of seeing that in the theater. It's just over the top. You have not just horror and zombies, but you also have medieval setting, which I love. You know, the sword and sandals type movies. And
this is my boomstick.
Ah, so many great quotable lines.
And Bruce Campbell.
Yeah, and you got Bruce Campbell in there.
I'm kind of the same way. I kind of go between Evil Dead 2 and Army of Darkness. Like, I like them both, but it's hard to
choose.
Depending on the day, one could be, I could like one more than the other.
But, I mean, horror, I love as a means of telling a story. I mean, I love genre cinema, whether it's, you know, Western, sci-fi, and horror is just one of those great ones. And, you know, if we're going additional movies, you know, I just thought of some other ones that I love, like Blindness, I think, is a great underrated movie by the director who did City of God, about the world, everyone goes blind except for one person. And
City of God was great. I haven't seen it.
If everyone just kind of forgot about it. In the Mouth of Madness, another great John Carpenter film.
That was another
Lovecraft.
Creepy one with the old guy on the bike.
Yeah. Oh, it's got some great scenes in it. I love the Nightmare on Elm Street series. In particular, I love 3 and 4, I think, are great, where they actually start going into the dreams and they have to get like superpowers. It gets pretty over the top.
Blur. I don't like the Nightmare on Elm Street.
Phantasm, that whole series with the silver balls the tall man. The fifth one's coming out finally.
It is. It's his last movie.
Yep. Well, Angus Scrim. The Mist.
That's on my list to watch, actually.
Now, the original or the...
The remake, right?
Not the remake, because they're two different movies. John Carpenter's The Mist, which we keep coming back to
Carpenter. I know, we keep coming back to him, because we think of The Fog.
The Fog, yes.
John Carpenter did The Fog.
The Mist is Frank Darabont.
That's right.
Yeah, based off of Stephen King.
Walking the fog and gone, right? Yeah. I think I remember.
Pretty much.
Gone.
Mist is one of the... When I saw that movie, it's so unsettling at the end. You're just like...
Oh, yeah.
We'll talk about it more, because that's going to come back up.
Okay.
And I'll throw in Near Dark, which is one of my favorite vampire movies. Kind of a weird vampire movie where they're not called vampires, but clearly they're vampires. Right.
And horror, the horror genre is one of those that it is so wide. Like, there's so many, like,
right, because subgenres you can throw in there. So, like, put that there. Like, vampire movies, I am all in. And I don't consider them horror movies because I don't think they're scary. They're like, oh, it's a vampire movie. This is awesome.
Yeah.
And then The Shaun of the Dead, I would always put in comedy. But it's interesting to see, yeah, it's because when I think of horror movie, I think of, okay, this is going to scare the crap out of me and be bloody and gory. Yeah.
Speaking of horror comedy, have you seen Tucker and Dale versus Evil?
Oh, that is amazing.
That is awesome.
That's I've seen that. It's,
or Cabin in the Woods is another great
Cabin in the Woods is awesome.
Another great horror comedy. Yeah. Like,
but I mean, like, when it comes to, like, scary, like, my typical, like, scary movie is not so much, like, horror genre. Like, I think of more, like, creepy thrillers that kind of, like, they're more realistic, so I feel like horror has a little bit more over-the-top aspect to it.
Yeah.
Like,
like, ones that scare me is more of, like, the atmosphere. Like,
yeah.
Not so much the jumps, but, like, the atmosphere of, like, sounds and things you can't see.
Sort of like the Blair Witch Project.
Sort of.
And, I mean,
we'll get there.
We mainly talked about domestic horror films, but, like, if you get into, like, international, like, Japanese horror or Korean horror, like, I Saw the Devil is a creepy movie.
I don't even want to know. I'm sure there's so many things, especially in the Japanese world, that are...
Well, you can go down to Takashi Miike.
That's what I was just going to say, who's the director. His movies are over the top.
Yeah, they get pretty extreme. You have, like, The Audition, Gozo.
Give me an example of extreme.
The Audition, is that what it's called? Basically, it's a woman who slowly takes apart another man over time.
His movies are very...
Very violent, very graphic. You saw 13 Assassins, right?
Ooh, I love 13 Assassins.
That's the same director.
Ah, that movie's great.
Yeah, I mean, like, he's a great director, but, like, you remember some of the very graphic things.
Oh, yeah,
like,
that last 45-minute, like, one-take sort of, like,
or even the quadriplegic lady.
In the beginning. I forgot about that. That's
like,
right.
His other movies, like, throw in a lot more stuff. But he's also done children's movies. Like, he is all over the map and... Very interesting director to watch. And then, like, things like David Lynch movies are... I count them more as surreal films, but they definitely have, like, horror elements in them that, like...
Yeah. See, I sort of like the scare. I want to be, like, when I get home, kind of freaked out.
For me, it's I don't... Like, most, like, jump scares, they're more exciting to me. Like,
right.
I love haunted houses because if I get spooked, like, someone jumps out, I like, get excited. Like, oh, you got me. Like,
and I don't
get scared. House. It's more like,
I don't like haunted houses because I don't trust the people who work there because I think they're probably kind of crazy and they're going to have a bad day and they're going to bring a knife and shiv me in the dark and I'll bleed there and everyone will be like, hey, you must be part of the show.
Nah, all those people love Halloween so much. They're just there to have fun.
Or they're crazy.
So, we saw The Blair Witch this week.
We did. And before we jump into The Blair Witch, let's jump back, what is it, 17 years?
I just want to apologize to Mike's mom and Josh's mom and my mom. I am so, so sorry because it is my fault. Because it was my project. I am so scared.
So freaking cool.
And it was one of the Blair Witch Project. I mean, it was one of those, a very low budget movie that came out at the time. It was like, what, $20,000 to make. As far as I know, one of the first found footage films that really, like, if it wasn't the first one, but it was the first one that really, like, took off.
It had been the first one, like, a long while that really touted that and grasped people's, like, imagination. Because you have, there's definitely a history to that genre, especially in Italian cinema. You have the Mondo Cane series, which is found footage, things like Cannibal Holocaust.
Okay, yeah.
Faces of Death horrible. Is considered to be...
I won't watch that, dude. I watched one scene one day. I walked into dudes in college. oh, we got this video. And I saw a lady get hit by a train, and I will never get that image out of my head. And I was like, I can't watch this. I walked away.
Yeah, but a lot of that stuff in those movies are fake. I mean,
oh, really? I thought it was real.
No.
To this day, till literally 2 seconds ago, I still picture that lady dying. I was like, I've seen a real death.
Well, now you can let it go.
Maybe I can.
No, a lot of that stuff's
tonight's
fake.
The first night of healing.
Yeah, like Cannibal Holocaust is set up as a documentary picture.
Oh.
And there's things, I mean, there's even more extreme, like Uncle Tom's Cabin. I think that's what it's called.
That's interesting. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Not the book.
No, I know what you're talking about. I just never pictured it as found footage, but you're right.
Yeah, so there's definitely a history there, but definitely more on a grindhouse level cinema, right, where it was set up as a specific way. And then this is probably the first one that actually kind of breached over and caught the masses by hole, which I think is
And it's marketing, I think, is what really got it. Because it was
exactly,
they're the ones that really hit that viral marketing of the internet and like the fake little news clippets. And
it was on the bridge of like when internet was starting to become a common thing.
I don't remember having internet at all then, because I remember us knowing it was real. Oh, that was so real. That was so real.
I mean, I even remember seeing like flyers. Like people would put flyers up. Like
it was
missing
flyers, and it was like I remember, because I remember saying there's no internet to look up whether this is real or not. So we were all just like, it's real. And another person's like, no, I saw the actors on MTV, and we're like, where? We can't backtrack MTV, and we can never see this footage again. So are you lying? And they probably were. But
I mean, we're talking about the days of like Angel Fire accounts and GeoCities accounts.
Where, oh, I had a GeoCity. Kal-El
23. Yep. Where, I mean, like, the internet was there, but it was, you still looked at it as, you know, I really don't know what this is. You know, it's not someplace I go for information. So, you know.
Yeah, it
was still, yeah, definitely, 99, it was still definitely in its early stages.
Yeah.
I just remember the preview came on all the time on TV, and it was just the girl, like, sniffing, like, Mom, I love you, Mom. And then you were like, what is this movie?
Yeah. It definitely grasped everyone's imagination and fueled it more by the fact that it was stated as being real, and people just didn't know. I mean, it was like, is this real? I mean, it could be. I mean, I don't know why they would show a snuff film ostensibly in a theater.
But that's what the government does. It finds footage. Like, yeah, let's just let everyone see it.
Yeah,
let's
and obviously we're all old enough for that. I mean, I remember seeing it in the theater.
I had the experience in college. What year?
99.
Oh, okay, so I was 2 years into college.
Yeah, I mean, I remember seeing it at the theater, and I actually saw it at the Esquire, local reference.
Ooh, look at you, fancy.
And it was in there, very small, about, I think it's a 50-person theater, and it was completely packed. I somewhat remember there being people actually standing in there. Like, they sold extra tickets so that they could fill the entire theater.
They would.
And, I mean, it being a pretty cool experience where everyone was like, oh my goodness, this is freaky, and everyone, like, leaving. And it was definitely one of those things where it was much more enjoyable seeing it with a group of people and experiencing, and people being going in with some hesitance of what's going to happen, what am I going to see, and is this real, and just buying into the hype. It was definitely a fun picture to see. I mean,
it was a great experience seeing it in the theater, because I saw it at a small theater in Denver, the Mayan Theater in Denver, when I lived in Colorado, and it took me almost a week to get tickets to a show because it was sold out. This was before it was released like widely. And when I got tickets, I mean, just the line at the theater was crazy, and I was standing next to a guy who was like, this is real, is this real? And I felt bad, and I'm like, no, it's not real.
You ruined it.
That was me. I think it's real.
And just coming out, and it was one of those movies when you come out, like, it didn't show you a lot, and that's what was frightening,
right,
not knowing. It was all in your head. It just left this whole, like, pictures of what you thought the witch and what really happened in this, and the image of him just standing in the corner, and just like,
I've always wanted to, when I have, and I think I said this in the very first episode, when with children, when my kids are a little older, I've always wanted to, like, find an old VHS tape. Be like, guys, what's this? Let's put it in. And put it in a VCR and hit play and be like, what is this? Let's watch it. And let them think it's real. I think that would be pretty awesome.
That would be pretty fun.
Yeah. Tell them to jack up my kids, but still. Worth the joke.
They'll live.
They'll live. Because later on I'll be like, ha ha.
They'll figure it out pretty quickly.
Fun Halloween prank for the family.
Take them camping right after that.
Yes. No, so, we're going camping tonight, guys. Let's watch this video first.
Or even better yet, take them camping, but in a cabin as a TV, and then find
it. Wow, that's awesome. Guys, they only have one movie here. I have no idea what it is. Let's
put it
in.
There's a label on it.
What?
I lived in the mountains at the time after I saw it, so when I went home, my whole place where I lived was surrounded by trees, and I sat in my car for literally like 15 minutes until I got out and like, oh, man. Like, it was one of those... I wasn't like scared to death. It was just, I was just creeped out more than anything.
Well, and where I'm from, I was in Southern Virginia, and we lived off Witch Duck Road, which was named after a place where they would duck the witches in the water to see if they were real or not, because there's lots of Salem.
Witch duck, did they quack if they did?
No, because they ducked them. Quack. Because the story is if the witches survived, if they died, then they weren't a witch. But if they didn't die from drowning, then they were a witch.
Yeah,
so if the lady died, they'd be like, well, guess she wasn't. She was telling the truth after all.
The old time country.
No, but I loved...
That's what you Monty Python bits, right?
I loved that movie.
And after this, it was such a success, like, you know, $20,000 to make, made millions and millions and millions of dollars.
Yeah, one of the most successful independent films of all time.
Yeah. The studio was like, we gotta make more of these, so they fast-tracked a sequel. That came out in 2000 called Book of Shadows, Blair Witch 2. The original directors were writers on it. Eduardo Sanchez were involved in writing the sequel. I mean, the only thing I can say is I applaud that they tried something different. They're like, okay, we can't make the same thing.
If you thought the Blair Witch was scary, wait till you see it drawn.
Book of Shadows.
Yeah, it just failed all around.
Yeah, it just was not a good follow-up. It didn't obviously live up to the hype. I mean, a lot of what made the first one so great was the hype around it. I mean,
oh yeah,
the movie itself it's not bad, but I mean, it's the acting's not good, and it's you know, it's what it is. You go back and watch it, and you know what it is.
And via a app we've been playing, I realized that the actors haven't done anything since then, really.
Yeah,
because I looked it up on IMDb to try to match an actor, and I was like, what? There's no one. So
yeah, they didn't really do much after that. I mean, I don't remember if they were actual actors or if they were students, but it didn't launch any careers. It wasn't Star Wars.
It was not Star Wars. That's the best quote. Blair Witch, not Star Wars.
Blair Witch Project.
Sorry, Project.
Now it brings us to the release of The Blair Witch, which came out just recently, 17 years after the original, and it completely ignores the Book of Shadows sequel.
Yes, that's not canon. Book of Shadows is not canon.
It's part of the Legends.
Yes.
The series.
The Legends. I loved this movie. It was awesome.
It was kind of filmed in secret because they promoted it as The Woods for the longest time. And then just the summer at Comic-Con, they were like, hey, it's Blair Witch, guys.
Yeah.
We were filming it the whole time. You didn't know.
I thought they did a perfect job of taking what we loved about the first one, adding more to it and getting it more exciting, and then still delivering something really cool and fun. And it scared the crap out of me.
They really amped up. Like, they did a lot of... They tried to get that same feel as the first one, the found footage with the...
Can we just say they did a Force Awakens on it?
Basically,
that's kind of what they did.
It gave
you that same feel, and like, oh, this feels familiar, but yet a little different.
Yeah, I mean, they open up with the premise that the kid brother of the original main character in the
Heather,
has been searching for her and wondering where she is the entire time, and has found new video evidence, and so he is going to venture back into the woods to find his...
And the video evidence ends up being, like, prophetic or something, sort of?
It comes back around, we can say that.
There's more characters, there's more people, technology.
Yep, so they add
the
in...
The use of the drone.
Yep, they do a good job of showing all the different cameras and showing how they're going to relate it back and forth, and they end up at the woods, they meet
locals to take them out there. Mm-hmm.
And so they get out.
Hillbilly yokels.
Yeah.
So in the
how much spoiler territory do you want to go in? Spoiler alert, we're probably going to ruin a lot, so if you haven't seen the movie, tune out.
But in the first one, I got that she was sort of in like an American Beauty way, like dependent on the camera or on the camcorder. Like, you got that it's her only way to feel connected to something because she's so devastated and scared. Mm-hmm. So she kept it with her and she kept it on. And this one, there's a couple times I'm like, would you really keep the camera on at this point? Wouldn't you just...
Yeah, there were a few moments, like, when they're sleeping in the tent, or they're in their tent and their camera's still on.
So. Yeah. Or, like, this awesome drone technology. Is that a real thing with the little thing from the phone? And it was interesting to me that nothing else in the phone worked, or nothing else on the phones worked, but you can still operate the drone if it's stuck in the tree.
You mentioned when we got out of the movie, like, they're using digital technology and there's all this static and cuts in between, like, turning it off and on.
It took me a little bit out of the film when they kept, like, having these digital, it's like, that doesn't happen with digital technology.
You're right.
Yeah.
But that was a stylistic choice. I can look past it as, you know.
That's interesting. Yeah, I was curled up in a ball on my seat, in my giant, you know, Cinemark seat, with my fanny pack that I got for free. Thanks, Cinemark. And I was curled up, and I actually had a tally mark of how many jump scares I had, and it was 12. 12 times where I just, like, and I flailed because nothing really happens. But, like, they do a great job of just, like, the noises, the sound.
When they get to, like, you know, the payoff where she finally finds the house and goes inside, like, very similar to the original Blair Witch, where they go into the house.
The house a lot longer in this one.
You can kind of sense, you get that feel of like, oh yeah, a lot of similarities, but they like amped it up.
Yeah, I feel like this house is a lot bigger.
I don't know. I mean,
some of the references, because they referenced, did this happen in the attic or the basement?
Yeah.
And they take you to both places.
Oh, gotcha. I didn't know that was ever up for grabs in the original.
No, because they make a point in the movie that
they mention it early.
The locals say, well, that's not true. They don't know if it took place in the attic or the basement.
Oh.
Gotta listen for those lines, buddy.
Well, I don't remember it being a debate in the first one. I always thought it was basement.
I think that's what they proposed as in the first movie, and this was just saying, just to create a different atmosphere.
Ah, well done. I didn't pick that up. I was pretty scared.
It did a great job of building atmosphere.
They gave you a glimpse of the witch.
First
time we've ever seen anything.
I kept picturing the movie Witch that came out last year. Like, I kept picturing that old lady. I was like, it's Bubba, that old lady. And I feel like the little glimpses together, like, it could be the same. These two movies could be the same, just, you know, 100, 200 years later.
It's true.
And the other history thing they added to it was that we always had those weird wooden things. And they mentioned that the fact that they had hung boulders from her arms and limbs, so it stretched her out.
Right.
When you got that glimpse.
Favorite, this is definitely a spoiler, but my favorite addition to the witch power was, out of nowhere, one of them is like a voodoo doll, and she breaks it, and that girl just folds in half. Yeah,
I mean, up to that point, you're kind of like in the same as the first one, like, is this thing really happening, or are they in their mind? And at that point, you're like, whoa.
Or the hillbillies doing it.
Yeah. Or the other girl who was sick when she cut her foot and, like,
and then had the monster.
She pulled something out of her leg, but then nothing else like came of it. Like, they kind of just cut that off. But,
well, I mean, it's just the latest on the table, since we're kind of talking spoilers. The witch is real, and there is actually something there running from the entire movie.
Oh yeah,
because in the first one they lost the map, and so you felt like, oh, they're just lost. In this one, they're not lost; they're stuck in some sort of time loop.
They did some sort of like time warp type thing
either they're going super fast, or the other people are going super fast, and they're going super slow, or time's not.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely some timey-wimey stuff going on here, but eventually, basically, what it does is, people start dying off. They're led, eventually, the two main characters led to the house. They run back into the local, who's apparently in some sort of accelerated timeline.
Yeah.
And they have a nice journey through the house. You could step out because
the girl stepped into slow time again.
Yeah. Claustrophobic scene where she's trying to crawl through a tunnel under the house. And
I'm kind of creepy now just thinking about it again. I kind of had forgotten, and now it's back.
I mean, like, there are a lot of, when I think about a lot of, I don't know, or holes, or like, really, from the beginning parts, but the when they get to the house, I think is the part I think of the most, that I'm just like, that was just intense. And I was just like, this was good.
Who cuts their foot that bad and says, let's keep going? That's when I say, you know what? Maybe we shouldn't go to the woods today. My foot's cut real bad. I'm going to turn around.
I just want to know what she cut her foot on.
A rock that had a baby egg in it or something.
But I mean, it was a rushing river. There's not going to be that sharp of rocks in a rushing river that you're going to cut your foot on that
bad. It was probably the witch's fingernail.
Probably. She probably just shoved it up in her foot.
Yeah.
I mean, there's definitely some logic
everywhere. And this witch is a force to be reckoned with. Like, there's the whole time I was like, there's hope. Like, let's say a bunch of Tony Starks in Iron Man suits, all 42 of them went into these woods. They don't win. Like, you don't win an Iron Man suit. Because I'm like, oh, well, you know, could you come in? Could you do Blair Witch 3 where they come in with, like, the military with guns? We're going to screw this place up. They all lose because there's really, like, it's hopelessness. Like, you're stuck in time. You can't see anything. You just die. Like, Tony Stark would not come out of those woods.
She could knock over trees.
He could, like, level the whole woods with his beam, and they still all die. That's what I was thinking the whole time. Like, Tony Stark would die.
Well, there was even, with that time loop in the loop, like, when they got to the house, it was still a familiar spot they've been to.
Yeah.
And that was part of, like, has that look like, you've been here, and the house has been here the whole time?
No, you don't,
like,
got to go in the house.
No.
But then again, it didn't matter if they went in or out, not in the house. Like, that thing was there.
And yeah, they were stuck there. I mean, she was outside, and she chased them inside, so.
Well, do we remember what she's so angry about, this witch?
Being killed?
Being killed, but she really was a witch, and then they killed her, so they were right this time.
Yeah.
And then you have to stand in the corner and not look at her, because if you look at her, you're going to die.
Yeah, that's all. If next time
and
she, I see a random house
one,
in the woods, just stay in the
more,
corner.
More than the original one, like in this one, she tricks them to turn around.
Yes. Yeah.
She plays little tricks on them.
Yeah, she's a little tricksy witch.
I would recommend seeing it. Like, I'm not a huge advocate of the found footage. Like, there's been a few that I like.
See, I like
I'm
them
not,
all.
I'm not a big fan.
I just feel like as a director, it is very, I feel like, clever to put it all together. I liked Chronicle a lot because I thought, oh, they're using, like, parking garages cameras. I thought it was cool. I really liked the Cloverfield movie.
I think it has to be done right. Like, I think it has to be self-contained. It has to be cameras that they have. I mean, like what you're saying with Chronicle. I mean, it's a good movie, but you know, where are they getting that footage from?
Parking garage, I just said.
Yeah, but how are they getting access to it?
They're police officers.
Who's editing these things together?
There's a guy who's really rich, has a lot of money and influence.
It's Tony Stark.
And it's Tony Stark. He's trying to find his superheroes. It's Bruce Wayne.
I would say anyone who's a fan of the Blair Witch Project, I think, would enjoy this. Like, I think it's a very good compliment to the original one.
Absolutely. I mean, it picks up where the last one left off, adds to the story, and is a fun ride. I mean, I was on not the edge of my seat the entire time, but I was definitely involved and it had a great sound to it. I would definitely say see it in a theater with big speakers because there's very subtle things are happening. There's no score in it. And it does a great job building atmosphere and tension.
Well, that leads us to a few recommendations that we can give everyone to watch at home. I'll kick it off with the recommendation I have. A movie directed by James Wan, who directed the two Conjuring movies and the first two Insidious movies. This one is Dead Silence. It's another one of those very set with sound. I like a movie that has, like I said before, like a good atmosphere. And there's a lot of scenes where she's not really a witch, but this lady who was killed is coming back for these people. I'm not going to give much away, but when she comes, the like noises all around you slowly kind of fade to silence before you die. There's a part where, you know, the clock's ticking and all you hear is it kind of slow down, but it's still ticking and then there's no sound. He does a good job of setting the tone. I've been a big fan of the movies James Wan does. I think he is one of a more current directors that has done a good job for horror with The Conjuring, Insidious. He directed the first Saw movie.
Ooh, I saw that.
Dead Silence. And then the movie he did with Kevin Bacon.
That movie. Not Hollow Man.
Death Sentence?
Death Sentence, which is like great throwback
no,
to
not Hollow
it was
Man.
Like Charles Bronson type
It's like
films.
A revenge movie kind
yeah.
of thing.
Oh, it's awesome. It has a great song.
And he did the Fast and Furious 7.
Ooh, I'm only on 4.
And he is going to direct the Aquaman movie next.
Mm-hmm. Drunk which Aquaman?
Which is supposed to be an underwater horror film.
Is it really?
That's what he said, that the underwater scenes are going to be very frightening.
Ooh, like what, Jaws or something?
And there's been a lot of his movies where he has hidden the Saw doll in it. Like this one is based around dolls.
I don't like dolls.
It's a ventriloquist
that
lady.
Bell?
Like,
yeah.
This Dead Silence, you wouldn't like it because it's based around ventriloquist dolls. And
creepy, man.
But you can find it on Netflix. I did look it up.
What is it called again?
Dead Silence.
Dead Silence. Ugh.
Do you remember that Tales from the Crypt episode where the guy had the ventriloquist dummy?
I actually do remember this.
And at the end, he takes it off in his hands, his little brother, and it actually is talking.
Oh, I don't remember that. I remember the doll. I think I just maybe saw it or something, but I did not remember that.
It was pretty awesome. I love Tales from the Crypt. My recommendation is going to be Frank Darabont's The Mist. I love this movie. It is a great throwback to 1950s monster movies with an ending that is so depressing.
Don't expect to come out of this happy.
I've not seen the movie, but I did hear the ending, and it is the craziest thing I've ever heard.
Yeah, I just heard an interesting story about how that movie originally was greenlit for like $100 million budget, and Darabont had written that ending, and the studio was like, "You got to change this. This is way too depressing." And he said no, and they cut his budget to $7 million.
He's one that he pushes it. Like his Walking Dead, his season of The Walking Dead at the beginning.
What was his
fantastic.
Season?
The first season. And second season.
Yeah.
I mean, he hasn't done a lot, but I mean, you know, he did The Shawshank Redemption, which is one of the people think is one of the greatest movies of all time. The Green Mile. He wrote Nightmare on Elm Street 3. The Blob, the remake of The Blob he wrote.
Oh, did he do Cujo and Charlene?
No, he did not do those.
I like those.
But you can watch The Mist on Amazon Prime, and I highly recommend it. And especially if you're a parent, it has a whole new meaning when you watch it. Kind of, it flew under the radar. It didn't have a huge, you know, box office success, but it's really good watching going.
Coincidentally, I this week in 7 days, I cleared 16 episodes of the new Walking Dead season that popped on Netflix, which is season 6. So I'm always a season behind on most shows because of that. But I loved it. I know a lot of people I know who like the show think this is one of the worst seasons, but I binged it and I loved it. I thought it was new. Like they were introducing new thoughts, and I should have looked up his name.
Negan.
What is his name? He's the comedian in The Watchmen.
He's in a lot of Zack Snyder's movies.
Yeah, he was Thomas Wayne.
Jeffrey Dean Morton.
I love him, mainly because of the comedian. Like, I thought he did that so perfect, but I thought he was great as Negan. But I like this idea. What I like that they did is we've watched 5 seasons now.
It's like, wait till you get to the final episode, because you haven't read the books, so.
Yeah, I read volume 1, and that was it. What I like is this whole, you know, the whole entire journey for 5 seasons has been you following these characters as they learn not to trust other people. And in this season, you find that there are other good communities. And you as the viewer are the one who is distrusting now even more than the characters in the show. And I thought that was a really interesting twist where I was like, oh, I don't want them to trust anyone. And I thought there was some really good, some of their like, hey, we're not continuing the story this episode. We're going to go back for a second. I thought those were good episodes. I just liked the whole
I haven't caught season. Up on The Walking Dead, like the series. I've read the comics up to, I'm probably 20 issues behind, but I've read a lot of the comics.
Are they still going?
Yeah, they're still going.
I didn't know that. I read volume 1 like years ago, and that was about it.
Yeah, it's well, they hit 100 issues
recently? I think they're at one. I think they just hit 150.
150 now? Oh, yeah, because Negan.
Rick's still going?
Yeah, issue 100 was is
the introduction
what
of
the season finale of 6 was. Yeah. So I'm not going to spoil it for anyone
because
that
in some places, because I remember reading about the farm And it's only like, I mean,
and anyone who's read the book, like issue 100 is one, just like your Faces of Death sticking with you, like issue 100 of Walking Dead. Like I still can't get it out of my head. Like it.
So
it,
do you know Negan grows in the end of season 6?
Yes. Well, if they go by the books, I do. If they change it, I don't.
I have a guess based on clues from the episode, but I haven't. I want to hear after the podcast.
Yeah, I mean, we know what happened in the book, but I think they've been pretty vocal that they may or may not do.
Right. Well, the book. I feel like the movie hasn't really followed the book very much.
No, I mean
it does and it doesn't. Like,
yeah. There's definitely stylistic choices.
Yeah, they stray in pieces. Like
what HBO did with Game of Thrones, because it said screw the books.
Like they kind of gave the governor in the Walking Dead a little bit more in the show than they did in
whatever
the books.
I read, they got to the farm with Herschel, and in the books it was like a nothing. It was they were there for a second and gone.
Yeah.
And the movie, it was a whole, or the TV show was like almost a whole season.
The books spent a lot of time early at the prison.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I feel like, and we're getting off on a tangent here. But I felt like they didn't do enough with the governor and Michonne, that whole thing. I mean, I felt like they fleshed out much more in the books. Like, I mean, there's certain aspects where they do things better. There's certain aspects where they don't do things as well. I don't know. I've never gotten really into the show too much.
As compliment, if you read the books and watch the show, you can get kind of a...
Oh, I should do that. I'm waiting to see them come across like a Ren Faire, where they were like, hey, there's still knights with like... I want to see a knight on a horse, like with zombie heads on his lance as he's like galloping through.
Now, do you want to see zombie Ren Faire, or do you want to see...
No. I want to see people who's... And they haven't broke character. And so when Rick and the guys walk in, they're like, oh, hey there, sir.
Speaking, bring it back to some horror comedy, have you seen The Knights of Badassdom?
No.
I have not.
What is The Knights of Badassdom?
Oh, it is. It takes place at a Ren Faire.
Oh, I'm in.
And someone opens an evil, like a demon porthole where like creatures come out.
I'm in. Like a Hellmouth.
It has Peter Dinklage in it.
Cool. What are we seeing next week?
Next week, we are seeing Magnificent Seven.
Yes. Westerns, I'm way into.
Yes.
I love them. Love them.
Westerns are a great genre. There hasn't been, I don't think, a ton recently that I've been like...
Yeah.
Great.
I guess consider Django a Western. We can talk about this next week.
I would say there's not been a lot of good mainstream ones, but there's been a ton of good independent Westerns.
Yeah, there's a couple out there I want to see that I haven't seen yet.
Like James Got a Gun, I really liked.
Well, yeah, there's that one, and
which you didn't clearly. But I like Jane Got a Gun.
I actually haven't seen it, so I
good.
Some teasers for next week's discussion.
Yeah,
we'll see Magnificent Seven and
reap the world.
Talk about next week. Well, I'd like to thank everybody for checking out the Cinema Guys. Hope you enjoyed listening. Please rate us, review us, so we can work to make our show better. Spread the word and get people to subscribe to the Cinema Guys. You can also follow the Cinema Guys on Twitter. At the Cinema Guys, like us on Facebook. Email us any questions, comments you might have. The Cinema Guys at 134inc. That's 134ink.com. We would love to hear from all our fellow Cinema Guys and gals out there. Maybe we will see them at the movies sometime.